our goal as parents is to get to know the Father as best we can and learn how he relates to us as a loving father, and then ask the question, well, what does that mean for me towards my kids?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And how can I take his methods and implement them in our parenting? Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Making Hestery. My name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're the Hesses. Katie, how you doing?
Doing pretty good overall.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of a scratchy throat.
Yeah. Which is a huge bummer considering we were just really sick a couple weeks ago.
Thankfully, I feel mostly fine. But yesterday I had like a really sore throat and was super sniffly. And then today I'm a little bit stuffy and then my throat's just like itchy.
Yeah.
And it just like, I can feel it. I don't know. It's weird.
That is weird.
But I'm not accepting being sick. So it's just not happening.
Right.
I'm in denial.
Yeah. Thankfully, whatever you have doesn't seem to be lingering. Or
I think it's a quick, just normal cold passing through.
Maybe it's like a weather change thing because it got so warm so quickly.
Right. Because Izzy got it.
Yeah.
First, and so I don't know. I mean, she seems extra sensitive to whatever is coming around. Yeah. She is always the one to get it.
Yeah.
It seems.
That's true.
And so if it's that, then she's the one who gave it to me.
Yeah.
I was texting friends and I was like, I think maybe she coughed enough in my face that it transferred or sneezed on me one too many times. She has not mastered the, like always covering with coughing and sneezing. Most of the time, she's pretty good.
Yeah.
But every now and then it's like, no.
Yeah, kids are great at that.
Oh, yeah. And all those memes of like, like a fish, like with its mouth wide open. It's like the kid that just comes and coughs on your face and doesn't say anything.
Right. Speaking of coughing, mine seems pretty much gone.
Yeah.
For the most part, I'd say 95% gone.
Right, which is amazing, really, for you, because
this is like record time.
Right? Coughing usually is like half the year for you.
Yeah, I'll have a cough for 2 or 3 months. I'm pleased about that.
Yes, we're getting out of here.
Yeah, so we don't have again a whole lot to recap for this week. Mm-mm. It was fairly uneventful again.
Yeah,
but we do have another question.
Yes.
For our listeners to get to know us a little better.
Get to know you question.
So the question this week is, what is your favorite movie?
Favorite movie. Man, this is always a tough one because I feel like I have like seasonal favorites.
Yeah.
That like.
Right.
I'll get into phase and I'm like, oh, I forgot about this movie. This is my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. But which I guess probably tells you that's might not be my favorite if I forget about it.
Sure.
But one movie that like I look forward to watching probably the most every year.
Okay.
This is a seasonal thing, but is The Holiday.
I knew you were going to say The Holiday. Okay.
It's just such a good, like feel good.
Yeah.
Dreamy movie.
It's funny. It's charming.
It checks all the boxes for me.
Yeah.
That like it's emotional in times that like I cry every single time I watch it.
Sure.
And I laugh every single time I watch it and I feel happy, you know, like I feel like it just is the perfect movie.
It is good.
And I think part of the allure of it for me too is that it is like a Christmas time movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, it's not like I'm going to watch this movie in June type thing.
Yep.
It just keeps the special magic to it.
Yeah, I agree. I've only seen that movie really a couple times because I hadn't seen it before you had introduced it to me.
Yeah.
And even that was just a couple years ago.
Right.
But yeah, like I would never, if it was like June and you were like, hey, do you want to watch The Holiday?
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, I don't want to watch The Holiday. You can watch The Holiday.
Yeah. But then like if you're just saying all around favorite movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to say like probably the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which might be cheating because that's three movies.
Right. Is there one that you like more than the other?
I don't know. There are aspects of all of them that mm-hmm. are like my favorite. Because I think probably the Two Towers.
Yeah.
Overall.
That's mine too.
But then the Return of the King is just so good.
Mm-hmm.
The ending is just perfect.
Yeah.
But then there's parts of Fellowship too. So it's like all of them. I know. I don't know which one I would pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely my favorite trilogy as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about you?
So my favorite movie, and usually with these kind of questions, I have a hard time too.
Yeah.
Sometimes people ask a question like that and I'm like, what movies have I seen?
Right. Or they all disappear.
When people, this memory. Always happens when people, like we have friends coming into town
mm-hmm.
and they're like, hey, do you have any restaurants that you recommend?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if we've ever eaten out and I like can't think of any.
Where do we live? I don't know.
Where have we eaten?
It is true though.
I don't know why that happens.
I don't either.
Anyways, back to the question.
Yep.
With this one, surprisingly, I have an immediate answer every time. My favorite movie is Interstellar.
Such a good movie.
It is just perfect.
It is. It's so it's such an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
That like you are literally, I feel like every time we watch it, even though we've seen it so many times, I'm like on the edge of my seat. Like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
It's so good.
Which it's been a while since we've watched it.
I know. We keep saying we need to watch it again.
Part of the reason is because it's so long.
Yeah.
And with a movie like that, I'm not interested in like, well, let's just watch like a third of it or half of it.
Right.
And then we'll finish it tomorrow. I'm like, I want to start it and I want to be locked in for the whole thing.
Right. Yep. Is that, I've never really thought about that, about this. Is this a movie that we could watch with Nora, do you think?
Maybe.
There are some more intense parts.
A little intense, but
it's clean.
We'd have to watch it one more time.
Yeah. I feel like she's getting to the age where like when she gets to watch like our movies.
I know.
That's like the best thing ever.
And I just can't wait for her to be old enough for us to like really introduce. Like I want to go through with her like Lord of the Rings movies.
Yes.
I'd love to go through like all the Marvel movies,
mm-hmm.
at least like the good ones up until it's just, it hasn't been the same.
Right. There are some things that it's like, nah, we can skip that one.
Yeah. But like go through like the Batman movies and stuff like that.
It's going to be cannot so much
wait
fun
for that.
I want to go through the Indiana Jones movies with her.
Oh, okay.
Because that was such a big part of my childhood.
Okay.
Indiana Jones and James Bond.
Yeah.
Which.
Sure.
Looking back at James Bond, I'm like, maybe I shouldn't have been watching those movies.
Maybe.
But it was so different, though. I feel like scandalous movies then were, like, different than scandalous movies now.
They were.
But they were still,
I think those ones.
Maybe it's just because I grew up watching them.
Yeah.
It just feels different.
So here's what's so interesting. This is so random because I was literally thinking about this morning and I don't even know why. But it's so interesting how as you have multiple kids, you just can't recreate the same experience or hold the same maybe levels of, I don't know if expectation or what, because, and I've heard it said this way, and this is a really good way of looking at it, that when you have one kid, they are doing and saying and like telling age appropriate jokes and things. And
right.
So Nora is 7 and she is doing age appropriate things for a 7-year-old. She's telling 7-year-old jokes.
Mm-hmm.
She's watching 7-year-old things. And Izzy is about to be 4.
Yeah.
And actually, as of
today, it's a week.
Yeah.
Saying?
I was going to say when this episode this episode will come out on her birthday.
Oh, that's right.
So happy birthday, Izzy. Happy birthday.
It's like we practice that. Happy birthday.
But Izzy is, she's about to be 4 and she is telling 7-year-old jokes because she has a 7-year-old sister.
That's true.
And so she is, she's exposed to 7-year-old things
when
Nora was not, when she was 4.
Right. Yeah.
And Ollie is 7 months and he's going to grow up with a sister that's 6 years older than him.
Yeah.
And so when he's 5, Nora will be telling him 11-year-old jokes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
true.
So it's just like, you just can't really like hold the same standard.
Right.
because you just can't necessarily like stop that from happening.
Right. You can't shield everything because then you would have to keep your kids in separate rooms at all times.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, obviously not going to happen unless you're crazy.
Right. And like, yeah, like Ollie will be around Izzy and her friends and he'll see Nora and her friends. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes back to, you know, you and I are the youngest in our families. And so I can guarantee that we were exposed to things at a younger age than our older siblings were.
Yeah, they were exposed to those things probably in small doses, just like being around church people, around just people out in public, but not like a consistent influence of older kid.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also wonder, too, if there's an element of like, it seems like parents just get a little more relaxed.
Sure.
In kind of every area, the more kids you have.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
And so, like, I'm wondering if we just start to make more justifications for why something is okay now for the youngest that wasn't okay.
Right.
Because, like, I grew up, and this is a running joke with our friends.
Yes.
But I grew up in a Seinfeld family.
Yep.
So I grew up on Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm.
That was our nightly routine.
Yep.
We knew when it came on every night.
Yep.
We had... this was before like DVDs or anything. So we would record it on VHS every night. And so we had a box of like 12 VHS tapes filled with just Seinfeld reruns would tape. And then they came out on DVD. It was like, well, we don't need these anymore.
Yeah. What did you do with them? What happened to the VHSs?
I am sure they got thrown away.
Yeah.
There's a small possibility they are existing somewhere,
storage.
Like in my parents' garage or in the attic or something. Which I would love, honestly, just love if that was the case.
That would be amazing.
But I grew up on Seinfeld, and I doubt when my oldest brother was, you know, 6, 7, he was watching something of that caliber.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because Seinfeld has some moments too where it's not necessarily geared towards children.
No. A lot of it, I mean, most of it went over my head.
Sure. Yeah. And there is probably a level of that too, that it's like, oh, well, they're not going to get it.
Yeah,
they're not going to understand this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder too, like, I don't necessarily think that it's all bad, you know, that parents kind of ease up as children come. Obviously, there is some necessary shielding that needs to be done, you know. But I think, you know, there are some things that it's like, oh, maybe we were a bit harsh on that to begin with, you know, and you kind of learn like where the lines are a little bit more. Because with that first kid, it's like, we have to protect them from the world.
Yes.
We have to shield them from everything. And it feels like so much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think probably as it goes along, as time goes along, as you're more experienced as a parent, it's like, oh, okay, well, this isn't actually as big of a deal as I felt like it was.
Right.
When this kid was 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But of course, there's still those things that you want to protect your kids' hearts and minds from.
Yeah. It's just interesting to think about how the more kids you have, the more it just changes the dynamic.
Right.
And you find yourself justifying new things and changing your own standards and allowing younger kids to do things that your older kids weren't allowed to do at that age.
Yep.
But anyways.
Anyways, that's not what this episode's about.
That's not what this episode's about. But that was just
became
a freebie.
About it for a little bit.
It was a free mini episode.
There we go.
Okay. Let's go ahead and jump into our topic. You okay? Little throat bubble.
That was, I feel like Gollum just came out. Just a little junk in my throat going on.
It's all right.
Okay.
It happens. I have that 100% of the time.
Yep. Just all the time.
Okay. So last episode, we talked about self-control.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about my favorite verse on self-control in the Bible, which doesn't actually mention the words, but it gives us a glimpse of what like the peak self-control looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Romans 8:38-39.
Yep.
And I'll paraphrase that. Nothing in the world can separate us from God's love.
Yep.
Angels or demons or height or depth or anything in all creation.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing can separate us from his love. And when I read that, that tells me that he's in absolute control of his love, because if we could do or say anything that would get him to stop loving us, then we would be the ones in control of his love.
Yep.
But we're not, because
right.
we can't.
We can't do anything to make him stop.
Yep. He says yes to love all the time.
Yep.
And he never says no.
Yep.
So we are going to sort of continue that topic. We're going to keep talking about that. But our listeners know at this point because they're listening to this episode. But mm-hmm. the title is The Lies We Believe. Because there are a few lies. And I think we'll probably gear this towards parenting. But I also feel like most topics that we talk about are just applicable to life.
Right. Yeah.
These things can apply to other relationships, mm-hmm. marriage, friendship, coworkers.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if you think about parenting, really, it's just a way more intense form of every other relationship that you've ever experienced.
Sure.
Because you are getting to know these tiny humans just because they're yours, just because, you know, you birthed them. Mm-hmm. That sounded weird. Just because you gave birth to them doesn't mean that you know all the ins and outs of their personality. Doesn't mean that you know them perfectly. Just like when you're meeting a stranger, you know relatively nothing about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're getting to know them. You're getting to know relationship dynamics. You're getting to understand conflict resolution together and all the things. So like parenting, of course, there are different aspects of it than just meeting a random stranger on the side of the road. But
mm-hmm.
it is, you know, everything that you apply in parenting as far as like relationship
mm-hmm.
things go can be applied to every other type of relationship that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and introduce the first lie.
Okay.
And I say the first lie because there are other lies that will follow in the coming episodes.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. This is part one of a series of which we don't know exactly how many there will be.
Right. There might be some more that pop up.
Yeah. There are a few that we know for sure need to be addressed.
Yeah.
And this one feels pretty prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And I doubt that we've ever met a parent who has not dealt with what we're about to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we are aware that this is a problem and we work towards fighting against it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes this is a lie that people believe and that they assume is the truth.
Yeah.
And they assume that this is the right way.
Right. I was about to say, when you said that like every parent has dealt with it, I was about to say, or needs to deal with.
Or needs to deal with it. Yeah. This is something that confronts every parent we've ever met.
Yeah.
And the lie is that it's our job to control our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that is so easy to fall into.
Yeah.
And the reason that's true is because our kids do things that we don't want them to do
mm-hmm.
every day. They do annoying things.
Yep.
They fight. They make messes that they don't want to clean up.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to eat dinner. And instead of eating dinner, they'll walk around on the chairs and then fall off and hit their head at least once or twice a week.
We're definitely not speaking from relative experiences
this is
here.
Totally hypothetical. But it's true that kids do things that we don't want them to do. And it's really tempting as a parent to try to step in as an external source of control
mm-hmm.
and decide that it's my job to control you and it's my job to make you do the things that I think you ought to do.
Right. Yeah, it's so easy as a parent to see your kid doing something that's like annoying or just not an ideal thing mm-hmm. that you would want them to be doing
mm-hmm.
and just want to step in and make it all go away.
Yeah.
Just because you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, the fact is, like, we spend a lot of time with our kids.
Yeah.
Most parents spend a lot of time with their kids.
Yeah.
And so when you spend a lot of time with anybody, things that they do start to kind of grind your gears a little bit. You know, like, you can love a person with your entire being and still, we're human, so we do annoying stuff. Like, I'm sure there have been times that I've done something that you're like, I'd rather you not do that. You know, but I don't know.
Honestly, you're not a good example. You really don't.
Well, thank you. Yeah. But, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've done something to annoy somebody at some point in my life.
Somebody somewhere has been annoyed.
Somebody somewhere has been annoyed. And so it's really like, I think our immediate reaction, like we talked about the past couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
the difference of reaction and responses, our immediate reaction would be like, stop it. Just quit doing that.
And this obviously extends beyond just like annoying behavior.
Yeah.
To like actual things that like, oh, this isn't good.
Sure.
Like a sibling hits another one.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy as a parent to think, no, it's my job to make you, using quotes, to make you do X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm.
It's my job to make you kinder to your sibling.
Yep.
And it's just not true.
Yeah.
It's not ever true. It is not ever anybody's responsibility to control another person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even a phrase that people will like throw around. Like, hey, would you control your kids?
Yeah.
Or how often have you heard somebody say like, man, like that parent just cannot control their kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the degree to which we are successful at controlling our kids, I think is the degree to which we deprive them of actually like learning how to live and operate in the freedom that they were born into.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
So like if somebody were to tell me like, hey, like you're not very good at controlling your kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, that's huge. Thank you. Now, what they would probably mean by that is that your kids are like, they're out of control.
Yes.
And of course, as a parent, I would hear that and I would think, okay, it's not my job to control them, but what can I start doing to teach them how to control themselves?
Because mm-hmm.
that's what they were born for.
Yeah. Yep. Learning how to navigate decisions in their lives to create the best outcome for everybody involved.
Mm-hmm.
Not just themselves, but also being aware of, okay, what are my circumstances? How can I navigate this to the best of my ability to create something positive around me?
Yeah. Whenever we talk about this topic, I am always just in my head thinking about a scene from The Office
mm-hmm.
where, so Andy Bernard, he comes back from anger management after he punched a hole in the wall. And he comes back and, you know, his name is Andy.
Yeah.
And he walks in the office. Jim goes, hey, Andy, how you doing? And he goes, oh, it's Drew now. And Jim is like, I'm not going to call you Drew. And Andy goes, okay. He goes, I can't control what you do. I can only control what I do.
Yep.
And that's like one of his like anger management tools.
Yep.
But it's true.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Yep.
We can't control what our kids do. We can't control what our spouses do. We can only control what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually in learning to control yourself that you are best able to lead your kids into a place of self-control where they are able to control themselves.
Yeah.
And actually be responsible and make good choices without the need for an external source of control in the form of a parent.
Yes. Right. And that's when you see their success as a person, when they are out from under your wing.
Yeah.
And they're out there making good decisions for themselves. They're problem solving.
Yep.
They're able to see, okay, I could go this way or I could go this way. But this is the choice that I'm going to make because A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
They've actually analyzed what's going on around them so that they're able to like make a good choice.
Yeah.
Knowingly and not just like, nah, I'll just do this.
Yeah. And kids who grow up in a really controlling environment, they just don't learn how to take responsibility for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They don't learn to think through, how will this choice affect me? How will it affect other people?
Mm-hmm.
And like, what are going to be the consequences of this choice?
Yeah.
Of me doing this, of me saying this.
And good and bad consequences.
Good and bad. Yeah.
I feel like that just always needs to be clarified, that like consequences are not always negative. I think we use the word consequence more with negative circumstances, but with every decision, there are good and bad consequences.
Right.
It's just a result of what choice you've made.
Yeah. We do use the word consequences a lot, but I wonder if outcome would be a better term.
Yeah.
Because every choice has an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you do will have an outcome that will lead and like direct the course of your life.
Right.
We've talked about a lot of this in like earlier episodes, but this is just something that I think we need to, as parents, always be thinking about.
Yeah.
Because these are like the most common traps and pitfalls that we can stumble into.
Yep.
But on this topic, I always have to come back to the Garden of Eden and the two trees.
Yeah.
Because our goal as parents is to get to know the Father as best we can and learn how he relates to us as a loving father, and then ask the question, well, what does that mean for me towards my kids?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And how can I take his methods and implement them in our parenting?
Right. Yeah. How can I mirror his actions and his choices as a father?
Right.
As best as I can for my kids.
Yeah. What are his values? Why does he do what he does?
Yeah.
And so when you look in the Garden of Eden, you see very early on, you see his heart for his creation.
Mm-hmm.
You see his heart for people.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you ask the question, why did God create Adam and Eve? I think it boils down to that he was looking for somebody to experience his love.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, within himself, there's this theological term, perichoresis.
Mm-hmm.
That means, and some people will call that like the circle dance.
Yeah.
But it basically means that like the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit were experiencing perfect community mm-hmm. and unity and sharing of love within themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so they looked for an opportunity to have somebody else be a part of that.
Yeah.
And so they created the world and they created Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And so Adam and Eve come on the scene and the Lord puts them in this perfect paradise,
mm-hmm.
this perfect garden, creates just for them.
Yeah.
And in it, he puts two trees, and he put the tree of life and he put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to read that story and think, man, I wish that second tree would have been somewhere else.
Right. Way up high on like a super steep mountain,
put hard it somewhere, to get to. Put it somewhere where people just wouldn't have found it.
Right.
But it was absolutely necessary mm-hmm. that he created both trees.
Yeah.
Because the Lord's desire for them was that they would be both the recipients and the extension of his love.
Mm-hmm.
That they would receive his love, that they would love him in return.
Yeah.
And then that they would carry his love, his goodness, and ultimately his kingdom and spread it to the rest of the world.
Right.
That was their mandate.
Yeah.
And the thing about love is that love by definition is to will the good of another.
Mm.
And if love is to will the good of another, then love by nature requires a choice.
Right. Yep. That can't exist without choice.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Without a will, you just can't. You can't love. Love, mm-hmm. like you said, it ceases to exist.
Yeah.
So God created people. He wanted there to be, it's a continual flow of giving and receiving love.
Mm-hmm.
The way he knew that within himself.
Yeah.
He wanted us to be a part of that. So he created Adam and Eve, and they had this perfect union with him, living mm-hmm. in a perfect paradise. They had everything they needed. But the only way that they would be free to choose to love him or even to obey him is if they were equally as free to disobey him.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't create an environment of control. He created an environment of freedom.
Yeah.
And so he put the two trees there and he said, don't eat from that one.
Right. He literally was like, all right, this is an option for you. This is why I don't want you to choose this option.
Right.
But you can have everything else.
Like
everything is accessible for you,
mm-hmm.
even this, if this is your choice. But here's why I don't want you to choose this. You know, he gave a very plain explanation of like, this is all for you.
Mm-hmm.
Please leave this one alone.
He wanted a healthy relationship, and the foundation of a healthy relationship is love. It needs respect, trust, honor, and all of those things disappear in the absence of choice.
Right. Yeah, it all just becomes control.
Yeah, and we become puppets and robots.
Yeah.
And that's just that wasn't his vision. Mm-hmm. It wasn't his desire.
Yep.
So he created an environment of freedom, and he set boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And he let them experience the outcome of their choice.
Mm-hmm.
So the question then becomes for us, well, what does that mean for us as parents?
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like to create an environment of freedom in which our kids are free to make the choices they're going to make within the boundaries and the limits that we've set?
Yeah.
And how do we as parents go through life letting our kids fail and make mistakes,
mm-hmm.
not letting it affect our love for them, and using their choices and their mistakes and their failures as opportunities not to control them and try to make them do what we want them to do.
Yeah.
But to teach them self-control and to teach them the value of responsibility and making better choices.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I feel like it's one of the hardest things as a parent. And I know we've only scratched the surface because we just have young kids.
Right.
But allowing your kids to fail is super tough.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, especially with our aged kids, like we can see the mistake coming. You know, it's like, okay, if you're going to jump off of this thing, that's probably going to hurt, you know, but like if you are, you know, of course, if they're going to jump off of like a super tall thing, we're not going to let them jump and break their legs, you know, but if it's just like a minor thing, we'll let it happen. You're like, you can try that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to let you know, it's probably not going to go super well. But even like allowing those things, it's just like, oh, you're like bracing for the impact. And I can only imagine that as our kids get older, that it's going to be really challenging, you know, because we've lived through, as parents, we've lived through those things. We've made the wrong choices. I know I had to learn the hard way for most things, you know, where I made choices that were not the choices that I think my parents would have preferred me to make, but I did it anyways because I'm stubborn. And I wanted to. And then I came back and I was like, you were right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I have seen those times even more now being parents ourselves. You know, you see how much work goes into parenting when you become a parent yourself.
For sure.
And how much grief I must have caused my parents, you know, like, oh, like there have been multiple times where I've texted my mom and been like, I'm sorry, or thank you for doing all these things for me. But yeah, that's just a really hard but necessary part of being a parent is creating those, like you said, those boundaries, those safe places for them to be able to experience those freedoms, whether they choose wisely or not is up to them, but really giving them the opportunity to genuinely choose themselves and experience the outcome either way.
Yeah. And as kids get older too, you kind of change the landscape of the boundaries that they have.
Right.
And that it's like pretty tight when they're really young. But like right now, like you said, our kids are pretty young. Our oldest is 7. And so we're not dealing with like major life altering decisions that they're making.
Yeah. Like her consequences are not going to be like, you might go to jail.
Right.
It's going to be like, you might not get to
read
a book tonight like for bedtime.
Not, Or like, we're just not going to do like any video games for a couple of days, you know? But as they get older, like we do step into those more serious potential outcomes.
Yeah.
Like you said, like you could go to jail if you do this, or, you know, you could get pregnant, or you could X, Y, or Z.
Yep.
So our thought is, well, let's work really hard while they're young to help them understand self-control.
Yes.
To help them understand that they are the ones that are making the choices that they're making. That, like, how often do we tell either Nora or Izzy that, like, your sister didn't make you mad?
Yeah.
And she didn't make you hit her. She didn't make you scream.
Yeah.
I get that she was probably being annoying.
Right.
I get that you didn't like what she was doing. But like your sister doesn't have that kind of power over you.
Right.
You hit her because that was your reaction to what she was doing.
She didn't take your hand and smack it into her own head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we've asked them the question. Okay, well, and I know we've talked about this, but it's so helpful. So just in case anybody hasn't heard this, this has been one of the most helpful things in teaching our kids everything that we're talking about. But there are two questions. First question is, who's in charge of you? And so we've been very clear with our girls that we are absolutely in charge.
Yeah.
That's our job. It's our role. You're not meant to be in charge. You don't need to be the parent. You don't need to parent your sibling. You don't need to enforce consequences. You don't need to threaten to spank them, literally. I've literally heard Nora threaten to spank Izzy. And I'm like, that's just not
so far out that of is your hula hoop.
So
it is
far
crazy.
Out of your responsibility. It is crazy that you think you need to be parenting her at that level. Which is so funny because like we don't threaten to spank.
No.
That's like that is an unbelievably rare occurrence.
Right. That comes like after so many different steps.
Yeah.
Like so many different things come before spanking. So
yeah. And I think in two episodes, the way I've kind of got it mapped out in my head, I think we'll talk about that more.
Yeah.
But it's just so funny. And they get these ideas in their heads. But yeah, we just want them to understand at a young age, you are responsible for you. Mm-hmm. I'm responsible for me. Mom is responsible for mom. Izzy's responsible for Izzy.
Yeah.
And yes, we're in charge of you. Mm-hmm. And then the second question we ask them is, well, who's in control of you?
Yeah.
And we teach them, okay, we're in charge of you, but you are in control of you. Mm-hmm. So everything you say, everything you do is a direct result. And I get that like your siblings or whatever, like whatever's around you, there is outside influence.
Yeah.
That is maybe making it difficult right. for you to be kind. Yes. And I get that.
Right.
I get that your sister's so your annoying right now.
Yeah.
I get that she's messing up everything you're trying to do.
Yeah.
I'm not denying the reality
right.
that you're experiencing something very annoying right now and that right. it's making it hard for you to remain kind and gentle and patient.
Yeah, because we experience that every day as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm not denying the reality of what's happening. I just need you to know that your sister didn't make you hit mm-hmm. her.
Yeah.
She didn't make you scream.
Yeah.
That was just how you chose to react to what was happening.
Yeah.
And we know that like kids are impulsive. Mm-hmm. I think it's very irresponsible of us to expect high levels of emotional maturity.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
From young kids.
Yeah. Kids are very reactionary.
Yes.
That's just in there.
Yeah.
You know, it's even from like an infant. Mm-hmm. They're hungry, they react and they cry.
Yeah.
They, you know, get startled, they react and they cry. Mm-hmm. And so as the kids grow, it's our job as parents to teach them to transition from just living a reactionary life into living a responsible life.
Absolutely.
Because responsibility is not innate.
Yeah.
Responsibility is learned. And so it's our job to step in and give them the tools. Mm-hmm. And teach them, like you said, that they are in control of themselves mm-hmm. and that they have the will and the power to respond mm-hmm. rather than just react to whatever is going on around them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's holding two ideas in tension. And it's on one hand, it's understanding that I know you're not going to be good at this.
Yeah.
Because you're 7, you're 3.
Right. You're literally not supposed to be good at this.
You yeah. are not supposed to be good at managing your emotions.
Yeah.
That's just like you are hardwired, mm-hmm. like you said, to be very reactionary,
yeah.
be very emotional. So I get that. But I also want to balance that with the reality that it is our responsibility to lead them mm-hmm. as they get older into greater capacity and ability to control themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's those two things. I get that, like, you didn't know what else to do mm-hmm. other than hit your sister.
Yeah.
Most adults aren't good at controlling themselves.
Right.
And rely on other people to manage their emotions and, you know, their behavior yep. for them. So I get that you're not good at that. But I also don't want to passively do nothing or say nothing mm-hmm. because there's going to be a day. Right now we're dealing with, well, Izzy made me mad. She made me hit her
yeah.
because she was, you know, messing up my craft stuff
or, yeah.
you know, she was
knocked down my tower.
Knocked down my tower. Yeah. yeah. Well, when she's 16, that will turn into, well, my friends made me mm-hmm. go to that party. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we're not interested in raising kids with a victim mentality mm-hmm. who blame shift. Because the thing about blaming people, all you're doing is you are outsourcing the responsibility for the quality of how you think and how you feel and how you act and how mm-hmm. you treat others. You're outsourcing that responsibility to the people around you.
Yeah.
And you say, you're basically living in such a way that your actions are communicating, I can't change unless you change.
Right. You get to determine if I have a good day today. Mm-hmm. You get to determine if I'm successful in whatever venture I'm pursuing.
Yeah. there are people who are very unhappy mm-hmm. that will find every opportunity to blame everybody else.
Yeah. I'm like, for kids why they're just unhappy. Driving me crazy. My husband won't let me, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, like we just want better for our kids.
Yes.
So this is how we're choosing to raise them. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're working really hard at.
Yeah.
I just thought of an example of, so a week or two ago, we talked about the victim mindset. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I talked about was one of the ways you can identify victim mindset is that you feel very limited in your choices. Mm-hmm. You see A or B in front of you, but you don't think to look for C or D.
Yeah.
And so practically how that looks with our kids often is, let's say Nora is doing something, she's building something with Legos or she's drawing a picture or something. Mm-hmm. And Izzy comes and she is disrupting what Nora's trying to do in a very annoying way. Right. And, you know, to her benefit, she just wants to be involved.
Yeah.
But Nora's not interested in that. Mm-hmm. So when that happens, Nora sees two options in front of her. Either Izzy stops immediately or I get angry and I yell and or I hit or something like that.
Yeah.
Those are the two options she sees. Mm-hmm. And so what we've been working really hard with her on is identifying option C, which is, what if you approached Izzy with a different tone? Mm-hmm. What if you didn't immediately jump to yelling at her?
Yeah.
But what if you posed, and we've even like practically given her like some, almost like a script to use. Because mm-hmm. what I say with Izzy all the time is, if I need her to do something, I'll start with, hey, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Because that works so brilliantly.
Yes. And it's like, oh, I get to help. I get to help Dad, or I get to help Nora. And I get to help whoever it is.
Totally shifts how she thinks about what I'm about to ask.
Yes.
Because even if it's something as simple as like, I need her to put her shoes on because we're trying to get out the door.
Right.
I could get into like controlling, rushed, hurried dad mode.
Yeah.
Where I just start barking orders. Mm-hmm. Izzy, put your shoes on.
Yeah.
Well, we know her well enough to know that that doesn't work with her.
It does not.
Very well. Mm. And it often produces the opposite
outcome.
But we've learned that if we will pose it as an invitation to be helpful and responsible, hey, Izzy, can you do me a favor? Can you put your shoes on?
Yeah.
It's usually like an instant response.
Yes.
She'll just do it right away.
Yeah.
She feels like she's a part of something, like she's being helpful and she's, you know, she's makes her feel big and old. Yeah.
Yep.
So we've tried giving that language to Nora and it's not quite like sinking in yet.
Right.
But we're just trying to equip her practically. Like, hey, here's option C. Mm-hmm. You don't have to yell at her. You don't have to hit her.
Yep.
She's probably not going to stop immediately, especially if you yell. Mm-hmm. So here's option C. Change your tone. Approach her very gently. Ask her, hey, Izzy, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
You know, I'm working on this. Could we, whatever, you know?
Can you color a picture for me over here so I can't see it? You know, just like finding these creative solutions that still include her, but maybe remove her from the situation at hand right there.
Yes.
But giving her a space to still feel involved, to still feel loved and seen, because she has this, she has such a desire. And I think this is most kids, especially like younger siblings. With older kids, I feel like older kids could be like, I can do stuff by myself all day long and like, I'm good, you know, as long as I have mom or dad, like we're fine. But younger siblings, I think, have a dynamic of, or they have a desire to be involved with what their older sibling is doing. Mm-hmm. I know I did growing up. I was like, it just feels so grown up. It feels so exciting to be involved with your older sibling, because just for the fact that they're older, honestly, it just feels grown up.
Yeah.
And so ways that like we can still allow Izzy to be involved, but not like right in there is just like key for her. And I think that can apply to most younger siblings too.
Yep.
That like just give them their own thing to be doing that is like what their sibling is doing or like what you're doing as a parent. But if you need to get it done without them directly involved, you know, have that outlet. Like, you're still here, but we're doing our own thing still.
Yeah. And it takes a while for the stuff to get ingrained in our kids' heads.
Yeah.
Because like you said before, responsibility is not necessarily like an innate thing for everybody. It's a learned trait.
Yeah.
To learn skill even. And we're just kind of chipping away.
Yep.
Little by little.
Yeah. And I think with kids especially, repetition is so key, and patience in mm-hmm. that repetition, because I mean, how many times have we, I mean, like you said, we have said it over and over again, like, here's option C mm-hmm. with Izzy
yep.
or with whatever it is that you're doing, you know, like, because she, it's not always Izzy that frustrates her. Sometimes she gets frustrated with just because what she's doing is not turning out the way that she wants it to.
Mm-hmm.
But on the outside, as a parent, you can see a clear way out.
Yeah.
But in the moment, I mean, even as an adult, like, when you get stuck in a certain thing that you like, you have a vision for what you're doing, but it's just not turning out the way that you want to. It's really difficult. Like, you have to really take a step back to evaluate what's going on to be able to see option C.
Yeah.
And so for a kid, like, how much more difficult is it to see?
Sure.
So like, as a parent, we can do our kids a favor by saying like, hey, like, have you thought about this? Or I wonder if this would work.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause with Nora, there have been multiple times that like, I've said, okay, well, how about you? Like, what if you try it this way? She's like, no, I don't want to do it that way. I'm like, okay, that's totally fine. Totally up to you whether you want to try that or not. But it seems like you're getting frustrated with this way. Here's this option. Take it or leave it.
Right.
And then most of the time she ends up at that option that I gave her, mm-hmm. whether it's with tears or without tears is up to her.
Yeah.
But yeah, so repetition, like mm-hmm. you're going to find yourself, especially as a parent, having the same conversations with your kid over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But I mean, we can speak to that working. Because mm-hmm. there have been so many times where it's like, this just does not seem like it's clicking. Like, I know this is the right way to go. I know this is going to be the best way to like teach them, but like, why isn't it sinking in? And then all of a sudden one day it's like, oh, mm-hmm. they just get it. And so I think it's just a matter of being willing to stay with it.
Yeah.
With them in those times of like, okay, I'm going to tell you the same thing that I just told you yesterday, or I just told you 5 minutes ago, because that is a value for us. And so I'm going to stick to it. And when they see that you're serious about it,
mm-hmm.
that you actually mean what you say, then kids want to please their parents.
Yeah.
Whether you're a good parent or not,
mm-hmm.
like, kids want to please their parents. And so when they see that like something is important to you, eventually it'll kind of sink in like, okay, I understand why this is such a big deal for mom or for dad. And so one day it'll seem like all of it just like falls into place.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need to wrap this up, but I'll close with this, that I do think it's really helpful to be like consistent and repetitious mm-hmm. in just like offering these different tools, offering these different choices, offering scripts even mm-hmm. for your kids to try out that will produce the outcome that they were hoping that mm-hmm. their outburst would produce, but isn't.
Yeah.
But I think the best thing that we can do is to just model for them the very thing that we're trying to get them to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, again, we don't do this perfectly, of course, but the best thing we can do to teach Nora or to get it instilled in her, this idea that like yelling at Izzy isn't the best way to mm-hmm. motivate her to do what you want her to do.
Yeah.
The best way to help Nora get that is to just show her by interacting with Izzy mm-hmm. in the way that we want Nora to.
Yeah. Yeah. Because kids are very observant.
Yeah.
And they'll see, oh, that worked really well.
And I think
maybe
even,
I should try that.
Yeah. And sometimes, cause like Nora is she's so smart and observant mm-hmm. and aware that she will like actively think about the way people are doing things.
Yeah.
She'll see people at the store, and maybe in a second you can tell the story of you were recently at the store with Nora and you saw a parent.
Oh yeah.
Who's having a tough time.
Yeah.
But like Nora does. But I think for a lot of kids who are not necessarily as like observant or aware, they still pick up on that stuff mm-hmm. subconsciously because it's just the way things are done.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way things are.
Yeah.
And they just have a natural tendency to pick up on that.
Right.
last thing. Go ahead and share that story and then we'll close it out.
All right. So we were at Costco and just walking around, and stores are one of my favorite places to observe people because it's just, there's so much going on.
Yep.
But anyways, we were walking around and we were kind of like, it was almost like we were following this one mom with her kids, and it was clear that it had been a long day.
Sure.
You know, probably not her best day, and we've all been there, but she was just like constantly like, stop doing that. Quit touching that. Get back in the cart. You know, it was just very, it was no like, hey, can you please do this? It was no like gentle voices involved. And I didn't say anything in the store. You know, I never, you know, I always try, if the girls say anything about it in the store, I'm like, well, hey, she's probably just having a harder day, or maybe, you know, maybe something bad happened to her, whatever.
Give her the benefit of the doubt.
Give her the benefit of the doubt. But we got home and I could kind of tell that, you know, the girls had like noticed a couple times. They were kind of like looking over like, what is going on over there? And the kids were being crazy. Like,
sure.
When the little boy was like standing, trying to stand up on like the seat where you like, you put your legs through, like he was being a bit like, it was dangerous.
Sure.
And so there were some times that it was like necessary for a little bit more abrupt language. But we get home and Nora was like, Mom, did you notice that one mom in the store? And I was like, oh, well, there were a lot of moms, you know. I knew exactly who she was talking about right away. But I wasn't going to be like, oh, you mean that mean mom? You know, like, not going to play into that narrative. And I was like, well, there's a bunch of moms with kids. Like, who are you talking about? And she's like, well, the mom who was being like really mean to her kids and like yelling a lot. And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I think I know who you're talking about. And again, I said, like, she's probably just having like a really hard day. And she was like, I'm just really glad that you aren't like that with us, that like you don't talk to us that way. And I was like, thank you. I was like, there are definitely times, you know, like I'm not perfect. I was like, you know that there are times where I have talked to you like that. You know, I always try to show her like, hey, we're all human. Yeah. We all make mistakes. It's just our responsibility to clean it up. And I was like, but there are, you know, it's like those times that I am like that with you, like, what do we, like, what normally happens, you know, after that? Like, we apologize and do all these things. But yeah, kids, all that to say, kids are watching.
They are.
They're paying attention.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, that memory is a bit fuzzy now. So if I said something else, did I say anything else that,
that's exactly that how I told I remember you?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're watching.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. Well, I think that's going to be it for this episode. A couple of things we want to mention. Katie, would you actually hold that up? For those of you who haven't seen or haven't heard, we recently released a children's book.
We did.
Our first one.
So
and
fun.
It has been really well received.
It has. Yeah.
We've had lots of good feedback on it.
Yeah. Been super pleased.
Yep. It's been very encouraging.
So thank you, everybody who has bought and loved the book.
Yep. Thank you for everybody who has left us a review.
Yes.
Because that's extremely helpful.
So helpful.
And we always put a link in our show notes to our books and to social media. If you want to write us an email, send in a question, you can do any of that there. But yeah, we just wanted to mention this again. It's been a really great resource for a lot of people.
Yeah.
We've had people telling us that their kids just want to read it every day.
Yeah.
And so if you don't know what it's about, it's called What Does God Say About Me? Declarations for Kids from A to Z. And we take kids through the alphabet, and every alphabet has a declaration about themselves that we believe to be true based on how we know that we were created in the image of God.
Yeah.
So I am amazing. I am brave. I'm creative. And we work through the whole alphabet. And it's just a way of teaching kids to think about themselves the way God does.
Yeah. Right. Which is just such a powerful tool, because I think there's just so many things that are thrown at us as we go through life, just opinions from friends, even things that we say as parents that could be either it was meant that way or it was taken the wrong way that was harmful or hurtful. So these things, when we can align, we can help align our kids' thoughts about themselves with the way that God thinks about them. It's just setting them up for such so such an easier time of like knowing who they truly are created to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the time our kids are around 7 years old, they will have formed their core beliefs about their identity.
Yeah.
So we thought, let's write a kid's book targeting young kids mm-hmm. and help them build a foundation of thinking good and true things about themselves.
Yeah.
So that by the time they're seven, they don't have an uphill battle in front of them.
Right.
Trying to discover the truth about who they are mm-hmm. and believe in that truth.
Yeah. They're already agreeing with what the Lord says about them.
Yeah.
Rather than having to be like, that doesn't feel true. Now I have to work to remove the lie and believe the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's a little sample page of the inside too, if you want to see.
Super cute little illustrations.
Super cute.
Yeah. We're so pleased fun. With it.
Yes.
And I just want to say to everybody who is watching this on YouTube, if you would do us a favor, a really big favor, if you could like this video and subscribe, that is a very small thing that helps in a very big way. Mm-hmm. And if you were listening to this podcast on any audio platform, Apple, Spotify, anywhere, if you could do us a favor and leave us a review there, that is also a very small thing that helps in a very big way.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Well, that's going to be it for this episode. Once again, my name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're making history. We'll see you next time.